Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, AM 1400, positive talk radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has the theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests will discuss an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My first guest is the entertainment writer for the New York Post and a celebrity biographer. We'll discuss his new biography of pioneering comedian Red Fox called Black and Blue. My second guest is a celebrity economic researcher and analyst. He's been right throughout the 1990s and the 2000s. He now looks ahead to the 2010s with dire predictions from his latest book, The Great Crash Ahead. My third guest is a challenger for the Ventura City Council. We'll discuss the challenges she sees facing Ventura and her platform to address those challenges. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you just want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Michael Starr, has covered entertainment for the New York Post since 1995. He's written biographies of Peter Sellers, Art Carney, Joey Bishop, Bobby Darin, and Raymond Burr. Michael has appeared on numerous television shows such as Good Morning America, The Today Show, The Joy Bear Show, The Late Show, and the list goes on and on. Joining us from frigid New York City, how are you today, Michael?
I'm great, Billy. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for taking the time to join us to talk about your latest book, Red Fox. I think it's an interesting, he's an interesting subject for a biography. So I guess I want to start with the obvious question. How did you choose to write about Red Fox?
You know, Billy, I'm always looking to write about people whose story is sort of out there, but it's never really been told in depth. And, you know, Red was such a huge presence on TV in the early to mid 70s and even thereafter, and has such an interesting story. And I was actually surprised that nobody had really gone in depth into everything he accomplished in show business, which was a whole heck of a lot, you know, in 45 years.
Well, now, of all the people that, you know, time seems to have forgotten, whether it's on television or in the movies, why Red Fox, though? What was it in particular about his life that piqued your interest?
Well, there were a few things, Billy. First of all, the fact that, you know, I think of Red sort of like Satchel Paige. I mean, he was a legend in the African-American community who really didn't make it, you know, quote-unquote, to mainstream America till later in life. I mean, he was nearly 50 when Sanford and Son came on the air on NBC. But he had such a diverse background in comedy, even in Harlem here in New York in the 1940s, where he was friends with the man who would become Malcolm X. His name was Malcolm Little back then. And, you know, was a legend for what was called party records. He was known as the king of the party records in the 50s and the early 60s. And it just interested me. Even the fact that Red started out his career, didn't even want to be a comedian, really wanted to be a singer, and had put out six R&B sides on a jazz label from Newark, New Jersey called Savoy Records, and had been on the Major Bowes Amateur Hour radio show in 1939.
Sure.
when he was only 17. So just a lot of interesting things, and of course, you know, I cover television here, so just as a TV icon with Sanford and Son, and still airing on TV Land these days, and people, when they think of Red Fox, and they think, you know, him clutching his chest as Fred Sanford, you know, coming to join Elizabeth, it's the big one, honey, you know, I'm coming to join you, and everybody, it just brings a smile to your face, and he really he really brought a lot of laughter to a lot of people in his life.
He certainly did. There's no doubt about that, Michael. And I find it interesting, as you just pointed out, that he was an overnight sensation at the age of 49. But let's go back to the catch lines or the catch phrases that he used. And everybody knows them when they hear them. You big dummy. And right. This is the big one, Elizabeth. I'm coming to join you. Right. That's the one you just talked about. And I find it interesting. How would Red Fox, if he were alive today, looking back on that, how would he react to his place in history being, you know, summarized by just two catchphrases?
You know, I think he would have mixed emotions about it because during the initial success of Sanford and Son, while it made him an international star, he also, like a lot of other comedians and actors, you know, felt straitjacketed by the role after 3 or 4 years, ended up leaving the show after the sixth season. But, on the other hand, you know, fame was always what he wanted and always what he hungered for, and he certainly got it with Sanford and Son. And I think looking, you know, if he was still alive today, to still be remembered for that and for, you know, a groundbreaking TV star, the first African-American to headline a sitcom, I think he'd be very proud.
Well, I agree with you. My guest is Michael Starr, author of the biography Black and Blue, The Red Fox Story. And I'm talking about his comedy, because he was a comic long before we saw him on Sanford and Son. He was actually very on the cutting edge of comedy, not only, well, in so many different ways, and I'll have you explain that. But then to be capsulized down into the character of Fred Sanford, looking at that, did he feel in a straitjacket at all from the characterization on the television show, or did they allow him to really explore some of his more comedic side?
It was a little bit of both. I probably leaning more towards, I think he, after a while, he felt straitjacketed, but he did say that Fred, you know, with the heart attacks every time, that was his mother. That was, you know, Red's mother in real life would always be having a heart attack, or, you know, the arthritis, or she always had some physical malady. Anytime there was some bad news that she felt affected her, which is kind of like the way that Fred Sanford played it out. I mean, it was basically, as Red's, you know, once described him, as a Jewish mother. I mean, it was at the basis, it was a show about an older man who wants to hold on to his son, doesn't want him to leave the house, and will do anything to keep him, you know, at that junkyard in this case in Watts in L.A. But, I think he felt straitjacketed after the first couple of seasons. On the other hand, it brought him unbelievable success and wealth and acclaim that he always felt he didn't get in the years leading up to Sanford and Son. I mean, you know, here's a guy who started out working the club circuits as a stand-up comic, first with Slappy White and then later as a solo act, and, you know, in the late 40s and early 50s, and had to work what was called the Chitlin' Circuit because he was black and he couldn't work the mainstream white clubs, so he was relegated to a blacks-only circuit, and he always was a little angry about that, I think justifiably so. And when he finally broke through to the bigger clubs in New York and Las Vegas and L.A. in the early 60s, people really started to see what all the fuss was about because he was just a really funny guy. And you mentioned Billy about his stand-up act. It was, you know, back then it was dubbed Triple X. You listen to it today, it's really not that dirty, but in context of, you know, Eisenhower era America, where, you know, comics, you know, that, you know, you tell a joke about your wife, you know, take my wife, please. Red was getting up there talking about, you know, sex and men and women and hygiene and bodily functions and really things that people weren't talking about back then. But he always felt that, you know, he related to the people, and that's the people he knew. That's what they wanted to hear about, and he was, you know, darned if he wasn't going to get up there and do it. And he turned out to be very successful and just was a funny guy. And another, you asked me before what I found interesting. You know, yeah. Later on in Red's act, you know, I would say in the mid-70s to his death in 1991, his stand-up act was extremely raunchy, especially in Las Vegas. And he did use four-letter words and all that kind of stuff. But not early on. In the 40s and the 50s, when he was really big as the king of the party records, he never, ever used profanity. He used clever wordplay and, you know, double entendres, and you knew what he was talking about. But part of the magic, I think, part of his magic on stage was that he was able to talk about these kinds of things that people, you know, wouldn't normally talk about in a very humorous way without using dirty language.
My guest is Michael Starr, author of the book Black and Blue, the life story of Red Fox. Michael, I'm going to ask you to take a step back because you do this for television for the New York Post. Kind of, in what ways did Red Fox influence, even open the door for some of the comedians that we take for granted today? People like Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Jamie Foxx, and Chris Rock.
Right. Well, I think, and it's a good question, and you mentioned Richard Pryor. Red had a comedy club, and he owned a comedy club called Red's Place in Los Angeles in the late 60s. It was on La Cienega Boulevard. And I mention that because Richard Pryor, who was an up-and-coming comic, spent a lot of time there with Red, talking to Red. They did a lot of cocaine together, which Pryor wrote about in his own book. But he was really one of Red's proteges, and he saw that, you know, you could get up on stage and you didn't have to, quote-unquote, conform to the, you know, typical showbiz comedian, you know, getting up and telling, you know, jokes about your wife or you know, whatever, the bad food you had. I mean, I think after watching Red work at his club and hearing his records, Pryor felt more liberated and took his own comedy in a different direction, as did the, and you know, that in turn opened the door for people you mentioned like Chris Rock and Sinbad and Jamie Foxx and those sorts of comics. I mean, when Red was hitting his stride in the early 60s, there weren't that many African-American comedians out there. And, you know, there was Dick Gregory was coming along, but he was political more so than anything else. And Bill Cosby was considered, you know, very mainstream. So Red sort of was a rebel who just, you know, refused to compromise and set an example for other guys who came along later on and said, you know what, I could, if I just go up there and be myself and talk about what I want to talk about, it's gonna strike a chord in the public. And I think that's what, you know, Red was responsible for a lot of that. And I mean, he himself would tell you today, I think if he was around, that he didn't get the credit he felt he deserved for banging down a lot of those doors. And even if you just look at it from a racial standpoint, I mean, you know, Red was one of the first black headliners in Las Vegas and in LA to play the bigger clubs. So even in that sense, he really opened a lot of doors for a lot of comedians that came in his wake.
He did that. And my guest is Michael Starr. Michael, you mentioned in that one of the young comedians that Red Fox actually influenced was Jamie Foxx, who coincidentally took his last name for the stage, Fox, based on Red Fox. And I find it interesting that Red Fox used a lot of plays on words, even in his own name, setting up the name of the show, Sanford and Son, his own name. Talk to us about some of the wordplay that he used for both of those.
Right. Well, we'll start with Sanford and Son. Red was born John Sanford. John Elroy Sanford was his real name. And he had an older brother he idolized named Fred. Fred G. Sanford was his older brother in real life, who was a couple years older than Red, and never quite made anything out of his life, you know, of substance. He was in and out of jail a lot, but Red idolized him and always talked about how great of an athlete Fred was, and, you know, had baseball been integrated at the time, he probably could have made the majors and this and that. But so when it came time to do this show for NBC and they were trying to think of a title, it was a show borrowed from the BBC in England called Steptoe and Son, about a rag and bone trade, you know, junk man in the East End of London with his son. And they decided to make that into an African-American version. It was perfect. Red just said, well, you know, let's just use Sanford. And he named his own character in memory of his brother, Fred. So there you go, Fred Sanford. And Red had a couple friends in high school that he incorporated into the show. He had a friend named Lamont Owsley when he was going to DuSable High School in Chicago, and that became his son Lamont on the show. He had a friend named Steve Trimble, who became the Reverend Trimble on Sanford and Son. And he also was, when he grew up in St. Louis, Red was born in St. Louis and spent the first about 6 years of his life there. One of his elementary school classmates was LaWanda Page, who ended up playing Aunt Esther on Sanford and Son. Yeah. Because of Red. He insisted that they fly her out for an audition, and the producers flew her out. She was living, I think, home in St. Louis at the time, was living with her sick mother, and she also had a stand-up and act for years, and it didn't seem to be working out, and they were going to send her back home, and Red said, no, let me work with her, because he really wanted her on the show, because he knew her, and he was comfortable with her, and she was a funny lady. And he spent a lot of time working with her in the script, and she finally, you know, got sort of got the knack down for doing TV comedy, and the rest is history.
As they say.
Yes, and as far as his name, Red Fox, when Red was living in Harlem in the mid-40s, was still known as John Sanford, but people used to say he was Foxy because of the way he dressed. You know, they called him a Foxy dresser. And because of his complexion, he was part American Indian, and his hair color was reddish. They would sometimes call him Red. And he was known as Chicago Red, and one of the guys, one of his best friends, was known as Detroit Red, and that was Malcolm Little, who later became Malcolm X. So he sort of took the Red and the Fox, put them together, and added the D and the X because he thought it looked better on a marquee. And, he was right. It stood out, and there's sort of one of those urban myths that he named himself after Jimmy Fox, who was a very Hall of Fame baseball player, but that's not the case.
That is not the case. Well, I'm glad you laid that to rest. My guest is Michael Starr, the biographer of Red Fox. Black and Blue is his new book. Now, Red Fox is remembered, Michael, more for his roles off camera as much as his TV roles on camera. According to People magazine, Fox at one point reportedly earned $4 million in a single year. Yet, he had IRS problems that really plagued him until the end of his life. Talk to us about the latter part of his life and some of the difficulties and challenges he faced there.
Yeah, well, Billy, the IRS stuff, it's a big part of Red's story because he didn't pay his taxes. He didn't believe in paying his taxes. And there's even a quote in the book. Red once said, "I will pay my taxes when there's a black president." So, I guess maybe he would have been paying them now. But in the 60s and 70s, he did not pay his taxes. He was a very poor businessman. He could roll out of bed and make $1 million in Las Vegas, but he would, he was addicted to keno, which was a game of chance and of cards in Las Vegas. He had a very heavy cocaine problem, which he spent a lot of money on. And part of his personality was he was so good to friends and hangers on and anybody with their hand out that he would just give away money, literally give away money out of his pocket. He never got paid back. And, you combine all that with him not being a good businessman. He started a string of, he had a beauty parlor, which didn't work out. He started a string of hair care products. That didn't work out. He had gone to high school with Johnny Johnson, who founded Ebony and Jet magazines, and Red figured, well, okay, I'm making good money now. I can do what he did. So he formed a production company called Red Fox Productions. And, put people to work and hired acts and everything, but it never worked out. And he didn't pay the rent on this building. He bought a building on La Brea Boulevard in Los Angeles. He never paid the rent on that. So it was sort of, borrowing from, Peter to pay Paul. He was juggling constantly. And it just was not a good recipe for any kind of financial success, even though his career was going great guns. Financially, he was a mess.
And that he was. My guest has been Michael Starr, author of the biography Black and Blue, The Red Fox Story. Michael, if people like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I think, if for the book, they can, obviously they can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. NYPost.com is the website for my newspaper, The New York Post. They can read my writing there. And I would just say, if people are at all interested in Red Fox, it's just I think it's just a really nice look at a man who left an indelible mark on show business.
Well, it is. It's a great biography. It's a great read. Michael, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Billy.